Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We've got good, bad, and crazy martinis for you today. Our good martini comes from the fearless and exceptional reporting of National Review's Jim Garrity. Our good martini relates to the Virginia governor's race, and the actual news isn't necessarily that good, but it could be very, very good for Ken Cuccinelli's campaign, because while folks may not have heard of Green Tech Automotive, that's a company that Terry McAuliffe used to run. I'll let you do most of the narrative here, but he decided in 2009 to build a plant in Mississippi instead of Virginia. At the time, it looked like the state, at least he tried to make the case that the state was giving him the runaround. Turned out that the state just wanted some questions answered that he never answered. And as you've discovered, turns out that he was actually running a visa scam here. What's going on?
For all of the lawyers for Green Tech listening, I would say I have not used the word scam. And Greg, you misspoke. You meant scheme was
scheme,
the term.
I'm sorry.
And neither you nor I are accusing Green Tech of saying this is a visa for sale scheme. That term actually comes from a memo from the Virginia Economic Development Partnership. It's the state's business recruitment agency. Green Tech, back in 2009, says they're interested in building a plant to manufacture their electric cars. They are looking at a couple spots in rural Virginia, and what they really wanted Virginia to do was to set up something called a regional center for a type of EB-5 visa. Well, EB-5 visas are basically, it goes back to about, I think, the year 2000 or so. Congress passed it so that if you're a wealthy foreigner and you'd like to immigrate to the U.S., you can get a U.S. residency visa if you invest $500,000 and the project that you invest in saves or creates 10 jobs, and if permanent jobs, within 2 years. And so basically the idea is if you're a wealthy investor and you want to create jobs in America, you can get your residency visa, and from that you can get your citizenship. Right now, about 3 out of every 4 people who receive these visas are Chinese right now, and the government issues about 10,000 of them a year. About 3,000 of them have to go through these things called regional centers. And the regional centers are basically government-authorized entities. And if you're getting a whiff of the public-private partnership that seems to be such a formula for crony capitalism, Greg, your antenna is very finely tuned. So basically, there was not one of these set up in these parts of Virginia that Green Tech needed. So they basically said to the state, we'd really like you to set this up so we can set up an EB-5 visa program, because the investment strategy for Green Tech relied very, very heavily on basically, you know, Chinese investors who wanted to get visas. At no point does Green Tech say, hey, we're selling these visas. However, these regional centers sure do kind of skate very close to creating the impression that you can buy a U.S. visa. And it's just a done deal. You invest with them, you get your visa. They ended up setting up a plant in Mississippi. They work through a regional center called Gulf Coast Funds Management. And right on their website, and this is right up on National Review if you want to take a look at it, the slogan is, invest in your future with EB-5. That's not quite saying visa for sale, but it certainly does create the impression that all you have to do is give them 500 grand and they will get you on the road to getting that U.S. visa. The state of Virginia got very wary of this. And Liz Povar, who is director of business development at the Virginia Economic Development Partnership, wrote to her colleagues why she was very skeptical of this whole endeavor. She says, not only based on lack of management expertise, not only based on lack of market preparation, I can't get my head around this being anything other than a visa for sale scheme with potential national security implications that we have no way to confirm or discount. I am not willing to stake Virginia's reputation on this at this juncture. In other words, the state basically said this emits an odor. And this really looks like that, yeah, maybe they want to create electric cars, but most of their money is going to come getting visas from Chinese businessmen at $500,000 a pop. Oh, by the way, all of this was designed to create a car that had a top speed of 35 miles an hour. Honest to God, on the website, Greg, it says, no highway driving, please. Basically, they're big golf carts. That's really what they are. And they, you know, they seem to believe that there was the green cars market was huge for this. Unsurprisingly, Virginia basically, you know, was very skeptical. As you said, they never explicitly said, no, we don't want to do business with you. But they said, look, here's our big list of, you know, questions about your management expertise, lack of a proven product. At that point, no EPA approval, any of that stuff. Oh, by the way, they have not really gotten their assembly line up, rocking and rolling, even now in 2013 down in Mississippi. So this is very much a troubled company. And you're probably thinking, well, why do we care about all this? Well, Terry McAuliffe is running for governor, who's never been elected to any office in his life. based on his business expertise. He's saying he knows how to create jobs. Well, maybe he knows how to create jobs. They certainly haven't created a ton of jobs in Mississippi. But if you've ever gotten kind of a strange whiff from Terry McAuliffe and how his political friends always seem to be involved with his business friends, and he's this wheeler dealer, and, you know, this is just one more log onto the bonfire, so to speak, of deals that just look a little bit like using special government favors and special government treatment to benefit investors and himself. And maybe they create jobs, maybe not. It all depends on what people want, you know, cars that can go 35 miles an hour at most.
Not good that we could potentially have a governor with this type of background, but the good news is it came out at a time when it could make a big difference in him not becoming the next governor of Virginia. All right, on to martini number two now. And if you're a regular listener to the Three Martini Lunch or a regular reader of the Campaign Spot, you will know that Pennsylvania Senator Pat Toomey holds a position in Jim's pantheon of current political figures that may only be rivaled by Bobby Jindal.
That's fair. Yeah.
Characterization.
Jindal Toomey was my dream ticket. So.
Yes. So yesterday, of course, Pat Toomey, along with West Virginia Democrat Joe Manchin, came together to put together what they said was a compromise on background checks to basically keep this bill alive. Here's a couple of clips from Toomey explaining why he's part of this deal.
I'm a gun owner, and the rights that are enshrined in the Second Amendment are very, very important to me personally, as I know they are to so many people across Pennsylvania. My record shows this. I've got to tell you candidly, I don't consider criminal background checks to be gun control. I think it's just common sense.
Essentially, what Toomey and Manchin are trying to do here is to expand background checks to all sales done at gun shows as well as anything done over the internet. What this is doing, essentially, is killing the Republican filibuster, making sure that there will be 60 votes to bring this bill to the floor. And then, Jim, who knows what could possibly be added? Well, we have a pretty good idea what the Democrats would like to add: magazine capacity restrictions, the assault weapons ban, if they can somehow cobble together the votes. We saw that once the Democrats got the 60 votes for Obamacare, who knows what kind of wheeling and dealing can be done to get to those 50 votes and those simple majority votes. Here's another clip from Toomey, which I think is perhaps the most disappointing of all.
But what also became apparent to me in the course of this debate, there was the danger that we might end up accomplishing nothing.
Jim, he fell victim to the "we've got to do something" crowd.
I wrote in the Morning Jolt today, and I just put up on the site, fairly or not, we need to take a look at, you know, the circumstances of Pat Toomey. This is a state where basically statewide elections get decided by the Philadelphia suburban counties. These are classic soccer mom moderate areas. These are not rock-ribbed, you know, conservative areas. The Philadelphia Inquirer has a very big market penetration in these counties. And so Pat Toomey, whether or not this becomes law, has to appear to be a guy who tried to do something. And you look at the NRA's objection to the provision, they basically make the argument that this wouldn't make a difference in the cases of Sandy Hook or any of the other mass shootings or spree shootings we've seen. I think the NRA's objection is accurate, but at the same time, the political reality is Pat Toomey has to look like he tried to do something. The world is full of a lot of voters who really want to do something. And at some point, Pat Toomey can either try to say, well, you know, you voters are stupid. You should recognize that no law can prevent another Sandy Hook, short of, you know, absolute confiscation of all privately owned firearms. Or he can say, well, I did try to do something, and here's what I did. I can respect it, even if I don't totally agree with it. I'd really like to see the argument that background checks at gun shows are ipso facto a bad thing, entirely separate from whether they do anything to prevent a gun massacre. Because as we all know, gun shows are not usually where criminals buy their guns. I think it's something like 2-3% of all guns used in crimes are purchased at gun shows. I don't think any of the recent, you know, high-profile shooting sprees of Tucson or Aurora or Virginia Tech or none of those where I had to purchase their guns at a gun show. Look, it's a fair criticism. I'm seeing fewer people say that if you purchase guns at a gun show, you should not undergo a criminal background check. And I'm still kind of curious to hear people make the argument that you should only undergo a criminal background check if you're purchasing from a federally licensed, you know, firearms dealer, your typical gun store. So, you know, it's frustrating hearing a lot of people saying, oh, we should have let Arlen Specter win. Toomey is just another Northeastern rhino, yada, yada, yada. And I feel great frustration with that because I think Toomey is a good guy on a whole bunch of issues, including the gun issue. The NRA is going to be scoring this vote, which means I think he's not going to get that A rating from the NRA next time around. I think maybe this takes him down to a B. But you know what? I mean, Joe Manchin is there. Joe Manchin was A-rated before then, and Joe Manchin spoke at the NRA convention. I think the fact that these two guys are going on board with this indicates the political reality that senators have to appear to do something. And the answer to this is not to demonize Toomey and Manchin. The answer is this, to point, you know, basically educate the electorate and just kind of observe that, you know, we need a electorate that recognizes you can't pass a bill to fix the Adam Lanzas of the world.
There's a couple things here. First of all, a lot of folks are worried, particularly the pro-gun groups, that this could end up criminalizing gun sellers, even if they do diligence on this. But the biggest thing for me is the door that this opens for a Democratic Senate majority to cram a whole bunch of stuff we really don't want into this bill. And if they do, and it looked like the Republicans had a decent chance before this deal to filibuster this, which would have blocked all of that. If any of that gets through now, that's to some extent on Pat Toomey, and so he's going to have to deal with that as well.
It's a fair fear, but I'm just going to tell you, with, you know, what, 40-some Republicans and the six or seven red state Democrats, I actually don't think you'll see anything like the assault weapons ban or anything else get through in this thing. And I actually think that, you know, there was an argument by the Wall Street Journal that filibustering was actually letting the red state Democrats off the hook. I want to see those folks sweat, and I want to see them disappoint the Michael Bloombergs of the world so that Mike Bloomberg starts, you know, feeling obligated to run ads against red state Democrats who can't get on board with this sort of thing.
All right, quickly on to number three now. Anthony Weiner could potentially be back in the headlines here. In fact, he may be a late entry into the race for New York City mayor. Obviously, we're going to have an election to see who the new mayor is later in the year. Anthony Weiner thinking potentially this is the time to jump back in. It's an open seat at this point. He's never been closely challenged when he's actually been on the ballot. It's been his own Twitter habits that got him into political trouble, as you might remember. Jim, I think if he got in, he'd actually have a decent chance of winning this thing. The only really sad part is Breitbart's not here to deal with this.
We could run Breitbart. the Republican ticket, that'd be fantastic. As somebody who was not vehemently anti-Sanford, I suppose I should, you know, leave the window open for redemption and rebuilding his life and, you know, being remembered for something beyond a scandal, the same thing for Anthony Weiner. One key point that I think is kind of remembered in this and really got washed over in that New York Times profile that came out yesterday, when Sanford comes back from Argentina, he just comes out and starts confessing in really unnervingly raw ways, to the point where everybody in the state is basically begging Governor Sanford, please stop talking about this. Yes, you're sorry, we got it. That was not the case with Anthony Weiner. And Anthony Weiner was quick to make vehement accusations against Breitbart and nasty right-wing bloggers and everybody else. He was a, I don't know if you say a good liar, but let's just say a passionate and emphatic liar. He only did the right thing once it had basically been forced out of him.
Right.
Everybody knew he was lying, and yet he continued to lie. We will see how this goes. For sheer entertainment value and awful off-color pun headlines, you just can't wait for Weiner 2013 to get started up again.
Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg. See you tomorrow.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.